Yeah, well, thank you for the introduction, opportunity to speak here in this wonderful institute. So I'm going to talk about a project that we did with my supervisor, Tomislav Prokopek, and a master's student, Sadro Barnaveli, last semester. Do you hear me well? And it's about obtaining inflation from spontaneously breaking vial symmetry. So this is just a little synopsis of the talk. I'm going to review why torsion has something to do with vial symmetry and geometrical ideas that are behind that construction. Also review what torsion is, because I know that not everybody's familiar with it. Describe an inflationary model and the possible signature that one can see. Okay, let's start. So, vial invariant gravity torsion. So first, let me motivate why I think we are vial symmetry is an interesting symmetry for fundamental physics. So we know that quantum field theories are not scale invariant, but as we change, this is what is usually called the Wilsonian view of the quantum field theory, and as you change the resolution of the microscope that you would use to probe your physics, the coupling constants of your theories acquire scale dependence or become dependent on the resolution you use, and they run with such a resolution. So if you think about taking the limit at which you probe physics at very short distance, so V limit, then you would expect that because your scale is going to infinity, there will be no scale dependence left. And analogously, if you take the limit of infinitely big probes, so the R limit, you would also expect the scale dependence to cease. And this is actually what is found in my example from renormalizable field theories. And these are points that in configuration space that are called the fixed point of the renormalization group flow, in which the theory becomes invariant, not only under scale transformation, as you would expect, but under the full conformal group. A conformal group is defined by the transformation of the metric tensor, as depicted in the slide. And it has been conjectured by Weinberg that this goes under the name of asymptotic safety, that gravity has a similar behavior in the ultraviolet. That is, you could hope to define quantum gravity by using tools to this symmetry. The problem with that is that gravity is not an intrinsically scale invariant theory, but there is a dimensionful constant, that is the Newton constant on Planck mass, which has a classical dimension too, in four dimensions. So if you want to make the theory scale invariant or conformal invariant, you need some quantum corrections that compensate for these large dimensions. And then you would expect large quantum correction in the ultraviolet. So the theory becomes non-perturbative, and you have to use non-perturbative technique to study complicated. But if you were able somehow to obtain gravity from a conformal invariant theory, which you would call the fundamental theory, then you might be able to reach this study of this conformal fixed point perturbatively. Now that's just intuitively, but that's not true. And it's also a very complicated problem in itself. So we didn't ask that question in this, not gonna ask this question in this talk, but I'm gonna ask whether it's possible to obtain gravity from a spontaneously breaking of conformal symmetry, and if you can do so by doing inflation at the same time. And if that's the case, then you can ask questions that in an effective field theory sort of setting, you would write down a theory that is a conformal invariant, and then ask if there are low energy signatures of this symmetry break. Now, because gravity itself is not invariant under that transformation, at the geometrical level, we have to enhance its geometry by introducing something else. That can be done in various ways. For example, you could do what Weil proposed, so introduce geometricity. It's an additional geometrical construction that you put on your manifold. Or you can introduce torsion. And torsion is here some definition of it. So it's defined as the anti-symmetric part of the connection. gamma lambda mu nu, or in the Weierbein formalism is the curvature or the zero derivative of the Weierbein. Here you can see example of a space time where there is which is flat but has torsion, and this helicoidal curve is the geodesic in this case. By the way, feel free of interrupting me any time if you have questions. So why should torsion have anything to do with Weyl invariant? Well, first let me tell you what is the geometrical interpretation of torsion. It's just a mathematical definition, but you can construct a nice geometrical interpretation by making the analogy with what curvature is. So you know that curvature is characterized somehow when you have vectors that is defined at a certain point, and if you parallel transport that vector around a loop, so this is the B and this is the one that you obtain as the parallel transport. If there is curvature, these two don't coincide, and curvature measure the failure of them, not coincide. Now, if you want to know what is the geometrical meaning in this sense of torsion, you have to go halfway. So you have to consider two vectors that are defined at the point, and then parallel transport them one along the other. And in a Riemannian geometry, what you get is a parallelogram that closes. But if there is torsion in the space-time, this parallelogram will fail to close. Here is an example. And torsion measured this failure to close of this parallelogram. It's an interesting interpretation of torsion for condensed matter. It is often used to describe defects in a continuous medium. So if you have a lattice sort of structure and you start inserting defects like that, and then you take continuum limit, that those defects are described by the torsion. So why should have this anything to do with Weyl symmetry, which is a local rescaling of the metric? Well, you can see it because from this parallelogram construction, if you only have a torsion trace, so torsion is a tensor with three indices, and the two are anti-symmetric, so there is one trace. And this trace in this parallelogram construction generates scale transformation. So you can use it to compensate for a local scale transformation of the metric, or equivalently of the Weierbein. And it goes like this. If you locally rescale your Weierbein in this fashion, and you change the torsion accordingly, then the spin connection, this is omega AB, that doesn't change. And that has the property that, Riemann or curvature will be mapped into itself by this transformation. So that's just more or less happens by construction. The other interesting property of this transformation is that it maps geodesics into geodesics, but realizing a reparametrization of proper time. So the geodesic equation, of course, this is including also torsion, is not just a metric connection here, changes multiplicatively, and proper time gets reparametrized. Of course, because the Riemann tensor stays the same, it does change by this transformation, the left-hand side of the Einstein's equation is also not. That's purely geometrical tensor, the Einstein tensor. But of course, the right-hand side is not the same. And what you have to do to make this equation Weyl invariant at this point is to promote the Newton constant to a field, which will be dynamical and condensate the Planck mass by some symmetry breaking process, which is what I'm going to expect next. The interpretation of this is now one point that's important here, that if you want to realize conformal symmetry, then you want to every condensate vanish, because that would define a scale and that would break the symmetry by definition. So as I go to the conformal point, I would require the Planck mass to go to zero, which has the interpretation that all particles or observer becomes massless in that limit. Makes sense. But the problem with that is that the Planck, the coupling constant between curvature and the stress tensor of matter goes as 1 over phi squared, where phi is the condensate, which means that if I take the limit of that going to 0, I end up with a strongly coupled theory. And that's not so easy to deal with. It's a gravity in a very strongly coupling limit. Okay. If we accept this discussion, then we can talk about how do we couple these torsion trace to matter. That's in the end what we're interested in, because it's, yeah, the physics will come from that. And there is a natural candidate to couple to this torsion trace. Now, I forgot to say one thing, that is this, that this transformation law I was talking about, it's really reminding us of U1 transformation law. It's the torsion trace exactly transform like U1 boson under the change of the metric that goes like this. And usually we couple the so it's like a gauge field, but it's not U1 because this is not theta. Is an element of R. So it's not U1 because it's not an element of a circle, but it's an element of a line. Okay, so that's the difference. But what you do in gauge theory is you couple gauge field to conserve current, and the natural candidate here is the scale current. So that's the pi mu that you see there. It's a scale current for a scalar field. And that is conserved if scale invariant is exact. Otherwise, it is just a current whose divergence gives you the energy momentum. So you probably have heard that scale invariance implies that the energy momentum tensor is traceless. Well, if this condition is realized, then you can construct what's called improved energy momentum tensor, which is traceless. But so that's one strategy that you could think of using. So you would couple gravity not to mu nu, but to this theta, which is traceless, and so realizes scale invariance. And if you do that, then you end up with a theory of non-minimally coupled scalars with minus a sixth the conformal coupling. So you end up with a theory that does such an interaction with the Ricci scale. But that's not the most general choice in this context, because what you can do is to treat this current, the dilatation current, which I just wrote there for scalar, for ON scalars, to couple that to the torsion trace. And if you do that, that just defines the linear coupling that would be something like T mu phi mu. And then you just complete the Lagrangian by demanding that the symmetry is realized with all orders. And that changes the kinetic terms of scalar fields in such a fashion where the partial derivative is just promoted to the partial derivative plus the U1 or this gauge field that I was talking about. And this is very analogous to what happens when you couple like complex scalar to a U1 gauge field, except that there is no I here. That's because the group is real. And then the sources of this two gravitational field, geometrical fields, will be dilatation current sourcing the torsion and the energy momentum tensor sourcing the metric. And the condition that I showed before, that's actually a condition for when a quantum field theory can be a scale invariant, so when the energy momentum tensor is the divergence of a vectorial current that gets promoted to curved spacetime with my covariant derivative. And becomes your gauge constraint. So one idea that, what motivation for doing this is that you can Well, you know that conformal symmetry is anomalous, right? It's you computed quantum expectation value of the energy momentum tensor trace, even if that should be zero. It's not zero in a general gravitational background. And there is that because there are anomalies. One such anomaly is given by the what they call local anomaly, because given by the Gauss-Bonnet term. And because the Gauss-Bonnet term is topological, it's a derivative of a vector, it implies that even though this contribution doesn't respect the tracelessness of the energy momentum tensor, it does respect the other, this condition. So, okay, this doesn't, I'm not saying that this introducing torsion takes care of the conformal anomaly, but the Gauss-Bonnet term is one of the three anomalies, possible anomalies that you can have, and this one is okay. It's not anomalous in this theory. Yes, this doesn't violate fundamental Faraday line. And it might have some physical interpretation of particle production, but yeah, we are not at the point in which I can say confidently that. So, no. All right. So this is about the gravity with torsion. Is there any question about this? Sure.
Maybe you could just summarize the dynamical degrees of freedom. So you had a big phi.
Yes.
Which was related to the Planck mass being promoted to a dynamical.
Yes.
Field. And then you had T mu.
Yes. Which is a vectorial yes.
Field. And then you had phi, little phi.
All right. So
that
so
also, is that an independent degree of freedom or?
Yeah, so that's a bit of notational mess, I think. So what I call capital phi is just generically something that condensates the Planck mass. And then now I'm going to look at a specific theory in which I have the metric. Then, okay, then I have this U1 field. And then I have some scalars that in general can be, well, we studied the case of ON scalars. And then within this, there is a specific combination that would be equal to phi to condensate. That's because if you include the higher dimensional operators in gravity, such as R squared, then phi is not just this little phi I squared, but is this phi I plus the curvature as well. But yeah, this is going to be clear. Yeah.
So, two things. So do I understand what so the conformal factor is now dynamical, the dynamical degree of freedom or not?
Well, that depends on the theory that you look at. But if you include a second order curvature square, for example, operator, then it becomes dynamic. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, but if you don't, there's a story. Those are awesome facts are where. Reason why you shouldn't do that, I don't agree with some of that. But if you don't do that, it's not.
Then it's not dynamic.
Okay. And is there, can you enforce the relationship you want to between, to get violent variance at a local or Lagrangian, or do you have to do this command?
Sorry, can you repeat this?
So to get this transformation you want to use torsion to get violent variance.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you have a way of doing that within? At the level of the Lagrangian, or do you just have to do this by hand?
No, you can do it at a Lagrangian level. You just if you introduce.
Is there a quick way to sketch how that works?
Yes. So. If I understand correctly what you're asking. Okay. So we have I have a connection. Right. So if I allow for anti-symmetric part here, this is not just a Christoffel symbol. But it's the sum of I denote with little circle the Christoffel symbol plus something that is called contortion, and then I can construct a curvature and everything else from this connection. But the transformation law there, so it becomes a bit more complicated here because this contortion is not just the torsion but it's a linear combination. But it will look like this. So it will look. Delta lambda mu theta under this conformal transformation. And the Riemann tensor plug this in, it's the same for gamma and this transform gamma. So it just implies that if I write this Lagrangian, with where this R now it's as a torsion end metric, and this is already a while invariant. We don't have to do anything here. For another one interaction that I can include is this one. Same story. The only thing that that you have to do by hand is that you have to promote the partial derivative of a scalar field to this U1 sort of derivative. And that makes the kinetic term for scalar invariant on its own. Then you can add them.
Okay, so you say once you do that definition, everything else falls on that.
Yeah. More or less, yes. Okay. So you
yeah. Would you have other invariant? Like, now that you have torsion, it means that the Ricci is no longer symmetric.
Yes.
So the skew symmetric part of that is like
that's a true.
Ricci term.
So
that guy can help out.
Sorry?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, so you're asking about this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this guy will be the exterior derivative of this. So with proportionality factor. So if you, yeah, the symmetric part will transform canonically, so it will transform like you expect. So if I write R mu nu, symmetric, square root of minus g, this is invariant. And also, if I write, the anti-symmetric part is just the field strength of this, so it's a variant. So I can also write that square.
So, before you get to the fission, in 1918, Lyle published his unified theory based on control. So, it's getting essential.
Yes.
It was criticized by Einstein because clubs. Because of the change in scale,
length of time. What is
your opinion?
Because you're asking. Because of course the time interval. Yes, it's change. Locally, sorry. Change like this, so you don't. Well, it's just like. I mean, time is not. Yeah. You would have to promote. So this is a dimensional quantity, right? So if you accept that the fact that scales are not universal things, so there's no universal scale, there's no fundamental length scale anywhere in physics. That's the assumption in this kind of models.
There are no clocks and runs.
Sorry.
If you have complete conformal symmetry, you can't have clocks and rods. There can't be clocks and rods.
Yeah, no. But
you can't measure with clocks and rods.
That's true. But as soon as you have, that would be the case if you have exact conformal symmetry. But as soon as you continuously break it, that means if there is a field that condensates to some mass. Then I can consider the ratio between this d tau and, not the ratio, but pi times d tau, and that will give me a measure of a clock. So that's, for example, in inflation, you know the inflaton field condensate, it changes. So that's one example. Even if you have curvature, you can do this. I put here.
Says out, he showed that if the connection involves the Ricci-Hutton connection,
mm-hmm.
then you can get around the aspect. We can talk about it.
Right. So, yeah, I think, okay, yeah, maybe we can talk about it later. This Einstein.
If I remember correctly, this reply, Einstein, what bugged really Einstein is the fact that he has such an infinite field. Then you would change the mass square, would be. Different, the
mass
physical particle will be different from different.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's, even if it cannot say at some point,
you're going to have
variations.
If Dirac gave up his theory. He abandoned it as a right start. So this is why it's an important question.
Yeah. Of course, yeah, that's valid. I mean, the masses will change along the cosmological history, but as long as you look at dimensionless ratios, which is anyway what you look in physics, I think it's good.
So it all depends on what point the symmetry is broken as to whether it's going to affect our observations or not.
That's right. Yeah.
Because we need masses. You can't have any particle with mass.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because the energy emitted tends to trace it.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Is there anything else? If not, I'll continue and describe exactly how you could break this symmetry. So there's. If you look at the specific symmetry breaking pattern, there is a well-defined mathematical procedure to analyze what degrees of freedom you expect, low energies. It's called the Maurer-Cartan construction. So in this case, we are going to look at breaking the conformal group of four-dimensional space-time, which is SO2-4, down to to Lorentz group, for example, which is SO1-3, or a Poincaré group, a symmetry group of Minkowski. If you do the Maurer-Cartan construction, you construct an element that belongs to the coset group, and the independent elements of this one form will tell you what are the degrees of freedom at low energy, and because there is this non-trivial commutation relation between the spatial conformal transformations, they're just local scale transformations, and the translation. I'm breaking five generators. These are the dilatation and the spatial conformal transformation. But because the spatial conformal transformation don't commute with translation, that means that the Goldstone modes for these two broken generators are not independent on each other. And indeed, you find that if you do this construction, you find that there is one physical dilaton, which is So this will be the Goldstone mode of the dilatation, and then there is also torsion in this construction if you construct the connection, Maurer-Cartan connection, and is also given by a similar expression, which is the exterior derivative of this. Dilaton field. So this is essentially saying that the transverse modes of T mu, well, the it's only the longitudinal mode of T mu which is relevant at low energies. We'll see later it's massless mode, while the other ones are massive, and after the symmetry break you can ignore them. If you are looking at physics much lower than the scale of break. So once we have these elements, we can construct our theory. And here I've included for a single scalar field all the operators that you can include in your theory. So it's this covariant, this modified covariant derivative with the T mu, which at this point is going to become the derivative, only the longitudinal part of T mu. And the non-minimal coupling, which has an arbitrary value, so it's not just -1/6 or -12 when new dimensions. It's interesting to note that in this Lagrangian for the scalar field, if you actually take the limit of c going to -1/6, so if you I wrote it somewhere else. Yes. So if you take this limit, then what happens is that the torsion decouples from the theory. So that's also true for if you go to higher order curvature invariant. So you can add R squared and R mu nu, and the Riemann squared is not independent because of the Gauss-Monnet theorem. You can add the field strength squared, And so one thing you can ask is, so okay, I know that the vile squared is just as a function of the metric that's vile invariant, right? That's vile tensor is by construction is. And again, if you take the limit of this coupling constant going to this Lagrangian, then the torsion decouples. So conformal theories that are constructed only with the metric are in this language are just the coupling limit of the torsion or the Dillon field. You can, you don't have to do anything in third dimension to the rest of the standard model, at least if neutrinos are massless, we know they are not, but we can cook up some mechanism that make them generate their mass from a Yukawa interaction. The rest of the standard model is okay in four dimensions. If it's not away from four dimension, the gauge field Lagrangian is not conformal or it's not bile invariant. And so it's you cannot construct bile invariant gauge theories away from four dimensions. Because that would mean that I promote the field strength of my gauge field to, well, d mu plus number, which happens to be d minus 4. And this will break gauge invariant, so you have to make a choice. But in four dimension, both of them can be obtained at the same time, which is nice. And the second, well, by construction, because they only depend on torsion and gravity and the metric, these operators, they satisfy this gauge constraint. So the gauge constraint is important because it will allow us to eliminate one degree of freedom. But so in the model that we studied, we did not include the Hermu-nu square term because that contains a ghost. And I don't know how to handle that. I don't think anybody does. We also didn't include the Fmu-nu square because that's just just radiation. It's conformal, so it's not important for inflation. But included the other operators. And because this is a gauge theory, we have somehow to fix the gauge or to choose a conformal frame. That is done by defining the what is called the Einstein frame, which is where gravity works as in Einsteinian theory, but there will be an additional operator. So first you have to eliminate the R squared term. So you introduce Lagrange multiplier that forces R squared to be another field, in this case omega. And then you include all the operators that are there. So here you can see that there is this Dilaton field, phi naught, that was coming from the Maurer-Cartan construction. It's also the longitudinal part of this of the torsion. And it appears in the covariant derivative, it appears in the Ricci scalar. And then there is this Lagrange multiplier, which is non-dynamical, and that allows us to fix it to the Planck mass. I'll note that this is only possible to do if this omega square is non-zero. So that's when the spontaneous breaking occurs. If you have a condensate, then in this case, the condensate is initially gravitational, so there is initially some a curvature, which is in a quasi de Sitter spacetime. And then that curvature gets converted into the condensate of another field. That's the process that we're going to study. The reason why this Planck mass, this omega is non-dynamical is because there is this gauge constant that allows you to eliminate. So what is interesting about this is that once you do Hamiltonian analysis and construct the Hamiltonian is just the sum of the lapse times the Hamiltonian plus the shift times the momentum constraint is standard in general relativity. We find that in the Hamiltonian there is a kinetic sector which is not flat. And it's the non-flatness is exactly due to the fact that we introduce this derivative, we modify the kinetic term, and it corresponds to a negatively curved manifold, which is analogous to the Poincaré plane in n-dimensions. So just maybe make this recap a little bit. So the degrees of freedom that I'm considering are these three. Now, the torsion, because we are only interested in low energy, we take it just the longitudinal part, so it will be one scalar. Then I have n scalar coming from here. And then this only has tensor degrees of freedom because I'm in the Einstein frame. So I have one tensor and n plus one scalars. And these n plus one scalars, because of the modification of the kinetic term, they live in this extended, this negatively curved space. But we have to do something because to understand this theory a bit better, because this metric has an off-diagonal term, so there is kinetic mixing between this phi naught and the On scalars. So we have to diagonalize that metric. And that is done by this transformation here, this set of transformation. So rho is, these are these On fields that we've introduced. These are somehow matter fields. And then phi naught is the geometrical conformal mode. And it can be mapped into this chi plus k one half log, that stuff. And then rho has to be the hyperbolic sinh of a variable psi in such a way that it canonically normalizes this kinetic term. So we end up with, this is a field space metric. And again, it's just Poincaré disk in n plus one dimension. So in the Einstein, so this is for the kinetic sector of the theory in the Einstein frame. And here is what happens to the potential. So in the Jordan frame, I had defined the coupling alpha to be the R squared coupling, then lambda to be phi to the fourth, and see the coupling of the non-minimal interaction. And in the Einstein frame, you have potential that looks like this. Now I've used the canonically normalized variable here for a certain hierarchy between the coupling constants. So that's the first thing that we learned. That you want to, of course, you want to inflate, to have inflation, but you also want to hand inflation. And to do that, you have to require that there is a hierarchy between this lambda coupling and the non-minimal coupling, specifically that lambda is much less than x. So otherwise, the potential looks like this. It still has two minima, so you will still condensate the field psi, but the energy density left at the end will be comparable with what you end at the beginning, and then you would enter eternal inflation. Now, how big does the hierarchy have to be? Well, there's another thing that has to be noticed here, and that is that the vacuum energy in this potential is positive at the end of inflation. So if you also want to exit inflation or be left with a cosmological constant that is small or comparable to what we have today, and then you have to compensate this positive contribution or require that is very small. And one way to do that is to look at the X sector. So of course, one thing, I said the standard model is conformally invariant. That's not true. There is the X mass parameter, which has dimension, and therefore it breaks conformal symmetry. But there are ways in which you can trigger the X condensation by a Kolevan-Weinberg mechanism. But if you, so there is, your X potential will be, there will be other fields other than the X, and will be conformal, so it has a minimum at zero. For V of zero is equal to zero. And then quantum correction will introduce second minima that makes the X condensate or some other field condensate, and that other field gives the X mass parameter and gives you the standard model Lagrange. Problem with this is that now the contribution to the vacuum energy from this process, from this Kolevan-Weinberg mechanism is going to be negative. And that's a necessary consequence because I've imposed that at zero, or for zero value of the fields, the potential is zero. But this gives you a negative contribution that can, in principle, compensate for this positive one that we have. But you require some amount of fine-tuning such to have them, to really have them compensate each other. If you have question about quantum correction, I will discuss those later. So hold your horses. And this implies that the hierarchy goes as such. So the non-minimal coupling has to be much bigger than this particular combination of alpha and lambda. Okay. Now, what are the inflationary dynamics that emerge from this? So, as you can see, the potential has a very nice, so that was compensate this positive vacuum energy. The inflation can happen here. There is a flow roll plateau, and then it can end by condensating the psi. If you do that, then you basically all your coupling constants are fixed by the CMB measurement. In particular, the alpha is totally determined by the amplitude of a scalar perturbation, like the Kober normalization, and has to be 10 to the 9, big number. But for the non-minimal coupling, well, you have to require that there are at least 50 foldings to solve the horizon and flatness problem. And so that depends, in this model, it depends on the initial condition that you choose for the field. So we thought of, having our inflaton field psi to start somewhere with this potential. If the inflaton field starts near a conformal point, which will be for psi is equal to zero, and then the condensate initially has the size of quantum fluctuation, it will give you a number 10 to the minus 6 for the initial value of psi. And that implies that the non-minimal coupling has to be smaller than well, 10 to minus 1, roughly, to obtain 50 foldings. And lambda has to be negligible with respect to C. So it has to be, well, maybe 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 5, that's fine. And then you can have arbitrary high number of foldings. Now, what's interesting about this is that the field psi doesn't roll that much. So because this is an hyperbolic function, there is exponential in there. And so at the minimum is just psi minimum is just something is something like square root of 6 times Planck mass. Maybe over anyway, so this is an order of number of order 1 times the Planck mass. So you don't have very large field excursion, but still Planckian field excursion. And also the it's gonna be coming back later, but the number of e-foldings grows logarithmically with the coupling constant, which implies, well, as something later. Okay? So this is
I was since you're running this large hierarchy, it's really interesting.
Sorry?
I was just curious whether you have a sense for whether this large hierarchy is really
stable. Yes, that's what I'm going to discuss later, yes. But in fact, it is. If you start with the quantum corrections to lambda are proportional to lambda, so and to C are proportional to lambda C, and to alpha, well, I don't know. But at one loop, it seems possible. Of course, we have to do more and more precise study too. And that's because all couplings are essentially perturbable. Because the C is small, it's smaller than 1. Now, alpha, I said, is 10 to the 9, but alpha multiplies r squared, so if I construct graviton propagator to this, I have to normalize this to 1. And then the actual coupling constant that appears that quantum corrects things is 1 over alpha. So that's 10 to the minus 9. So that's because all your couplings are sort of small, you can control them. This is within this model, so this has to be taken with a grain of salt, that this is just a toy model. So if you want to introduce, for example, like you cover interaction with this inflaton field, for example, they will correct lambda as well. So if I'm just in this model with these degrees of freedom, then I'm sort of okay. be more precise later, but if I introduce other interaction, yeah, I have to do all RG running to be sure. Yeah. Well, this was part two, so if you have any other questions, then take them now. If not, I will just move to the.
Maybe I have a question. So you mentioned trying to tune the negative radio correction to the Higgs potential or some other scalar potential against the positive value you have here. So
right.
So your fit to be inflated to the power spectrum fixes this potential for psi.
Yes.
And then requires then some like very, very specific coupling constants and particle content to get the negative radio correction to exactly compensate. To within one part.
Yeah, that's one way of doing it. Yes. The other way is because, okay, so the height of the potential that's controlled by half, and that's why it's connected to the spectrum of perturbation. But the height of the potential at the minimum is controlled by lambda, which is not constrained essentially by CMB measurement because, well, in this model, lambda has to be negligible, so you don't take it into account. So what we have to tune is this parameter lambda. Because you can get, if you have negative contribution, it can be whatever, but then I can tune this one to be. Now if whether that's stable, that's another question. Otherwise, you can just tune lambda to be zero. And then you're also done.
We know that the potential of the Higgs field density produces a severe cosmological constant.
Yes.
So how does that affect your inflation?
What
you need.
Yeah. Well. So the cosmological constant will.
Expansion.
Yeah. Yeah. That cosmological constant will appear after the electroweak symmetry breaking. I think because if it's if I'm in a symmetric phase for the then I'm around the origin for the Higgs field, so there's no and V of zero is zero in this case for the Higgs. So only after symmetry breaking that would be a problem. So here the idea is that you can cancel the two maybe. Or maybe there is something else that protects it. I mean, in some sense, conformal symmetry gives you, so there cannot be any scale. So all the scales, also the cosmological constant, have to be proportional to the same thing. That's the first condensate that you have. And that gives you some, I mean, I don't want to call it technical naturalness, but protects the quantum corrections.
Yeah.
That answer your question or not?
Yes.
There's a lot of mysteries about this. These are all problems.
Yeah.
Maybe I have just one more follow-up question. So is there any interesting phenomenology associated with that evolution? That after inflation is over, then you have this other degree of freedom, and you can roll in that other direction.
That's an interesting question. We haven't really looked at that, but I think so. Yeah, but that will depend on the coupling constant that you have. So, I mean, I have this psi, so these ON fields. But you can also have other sectors, right? So this will be the inflaton sector if you want, and then there will be maybe the Higgs sector. And they all depend on how they couple to the curve. So which one is the inflaton depends which one is the highest coupling to curvature in this sense. And then there will be a Higgs sector somewhere else. And there is some interesting phenomenology. Well, it depends. If you have rapid turning in field space, I would guess something would happen. Because you would so if this is my inflaton direction psi, and then some other direction. So inflation will do something like this. So this condensates, then maybe you trigger another condensation, right? So there will be a sharp turn in field space, which will give you a large field space acceleration, and I don't know, maybe gravitational waves, I don't know. But something might happen there, yes. But I haven't studied it. So.
Maybe you can bound lambda though, so you have to roll down by that much afterwards. And
yeah.
That latency has got to go somewhere. Maybe
yeah.
That's interesting.
No, no, that's an interesting thing, yes. So this, at this point, this is a toy model. But if you want to make it realistic, then you have to look at all these. So I'm going to move to the prediction of these models. Well, I wouldn't be here presenting if there was something wrong with CMB. So, well, it's just we are comfortably in the CMB band. So this is a prediction for the tensor to scalar ratio, and this is a prediction for the alpha parameters, the running of the spectral index. And it's what we obtain is a very small tensor to scalar ratio in general. So that's due to the fact that this potential is hyperbolic, and I'm going to show it a little bit here. If I'm looking at the potential for psi and the potential for rho, so that would be the case if I have just this particle potential with canonically normalized rho. But the hyperbolic nature of this potential is that near the edges, it's more flat. So the plateau is more is bigger, if you want. So that means that the slow roll parameters are going to become stay smaller near the end of inflation, and that's what and that's why the tensor to scalar ratio is small. So just to illustrate this, I have here plotted the tensor to scalar ratio computed with these two potential, same coupling constants, but one is the hyperbolic and the other one is the flat one. And for the hyperbolic one, you get roughly order 10 suppression of the tensor to scalar ratio. That's also what happens, but we also obtain a small tensor to scalar ratio in Sarobin C. So that's because this is driven again by the R squared term. That's the most important one. And also that's basically what you have in Sarobin C. R squared. Okay. The other main thing of this model, or in general, if you have a violin variant model of inflation, is that you have this dilaton is a flat direction. So it's there's an inflaton field which lives in this hyperbolic geometry, and that's because there is the dilaton, but then the dilaton decouples from the dynamics, just conserves, the Goldstones are just conserved curve. If I solve the equation of motion for it, I'm going to give you some this relation. And this can change the dynamics of inflation in the very early time. So it can introduce a period of what's called the nation-dominated era if this constant C of integration constant C is very big. This is something somehow angular momentum in field space, and if there is a lot of it, that's possible, then you have this initial dominated, kination dominated era. So here it's plot of the epsilon parameter, that's h dot over h squared for this case. So it starts at 3, that corresponds to the kination dominated epoch, and then really fast transitions to 0, and then this is the inflation. It lasts only 2 to 3 foldings, not that much. But in principle, this is something that you could see on the CMB. And here it's just a qualitative plot of what this will introduce in the CMB power spectrum. If this was just inflation, you would see roughly straight line, so almost scaling variant per spectrum perturbation. But because there is this initial kination-dominated epoch, that the power on very large scale gets suppressed. And by how much? Well, depends how much inflation lasted, depends how much energy there was in this initial flat direction, and whether it's observable or not also depends on this fact. Also, because this transition is very sharp, there is a memory effect that's communicated by this oscillation. So it's a sharp transition in time. It gives you oscillation in the power spectrum. So that's the way you could think of testing this model, at least in the CMB. So there is, for example, this anomaly around the octopole or quadrupole. So this is a way, it's not conformal symmetry, but it's an initial kination dominated era could explain that. And this is, this gives you that.
You'd have to fine tune a little bit to match this with our current Hubble, right? Like there's.
So if you want to explain the quadrupole, you mean that anomaly, yes. But. I think you just have to pump a lot of energy into the flat direction, kinetic energy. So,
oh, you said there's no particular reason why this feature would be the k where this feature appears today would correspond to the largest observable ones on Earth.
Exactly. Yeah. So if inflation lasts maybe 60, 70 foldings, then you would see. If it lasts much longer than that, then no hope. Because that would be too large of a speed. It depends, I think that's it depends on how long inflation lasts and how much energy there was in speed. Yes. So now I go to the quantum correction, which is what we were discussing earlier. So if we're just I computed the one loop, the correction from the scalar sector to the various coupling constants. And so I said that this is the hierarchy that we have to maintain, and this is the quantum correction that you get. So alpha essentially gets corrected by xi, so it doesn't change that much because it's, alpha was 10 to the 9 and xi was 10 to the minus 1, xi plus a 6, so one 6. Xi gets corrected by xi times lambda, so that's also negligible if you have this hierarchy. Lambda is much less than xi, and lambda gets corrected by lambda squared at one loop. So again, it's stable. So now what is missing here is, of course, if this was the whole story, then you would have the quantum correction respect to hierarchy. But of course, there's also gravitational correction, and the most important one, I think, is the one to lambda. I found a reference for that, and it gives. People have calculated this. I think authors are Salvio and from Italy. They found a delta lambda goes like 1 over alpha squared, c over alpha squared. And so this is will tell you what is the natural size somehow of lambda in the model. So it's 1 over alpha squared, so it's roughly 10 to the minus 18. 19 if I count that c is order 10 to minus 1. So it is okay for the hierarchy. So see, even in this case, c is much bigger than lambda. Delta c is much bigger than delta lambda. However, this number is too big if you want to compensate the electroweak vacuum energy. So this will give you too big cosmological constant, say. But okay, this is the value that this coupling had at that time. Maybe it runs with scale and today is different. Or maybe there is other contribution that you can include if you have other interactions, and those can change the story a little bit. That was another almost last point. So to trigger this condensation of the scalar field, of the inflaton field, you need to have non-minimal coupling C to be bigger than zero. Otherwise, the potential looks like this. And you can compute the running of C when the potential looks like this. And it turns out that that's, the beta function would be negative. So as I flow towards the ER, C will tend to grow. So if I start with a negative C and I have inflaton just staying is the minimum around zero, at some point, you can. At some scale, it can start turning and creating a minimum. And then the field will start condensating. So this is, in this sense, this is a spontaneous symmetry. But there is another part of the story. So that's you can only break conformal symmetry in this sort of models if you start, you already broken it to begin with, so by initial conditions somehow. That's because of this gauge constraint I was speaking about before. It essentially forces you to have a Planck mass via a combination of the Ricci scalar and the inflaton, so maybe make square of psi. And so if it is initially zero, then I must have that the Ricci scalar is non-zero. So that that constraint in this plane in which I have R with the Ricci scalar on one axis and the ON or the inflaton direction on the other one. So that constraint implies that the motion is always confined to some parabolas. And if I start at the point, the actual conformal point, which is 0, 0 in this plane, then I automatically go to anti de Sitter because the curvature goes negative here. So you cannot start there and have inflation. It would be anti de Sitter space time. But you can start higher here, so with a point where the curvature has some value, but the scalar field doesn't, so that there will be, yeah, conformal point for the scalar, but not for the for the metric. And then you will move along these lines, and where it stops, well, that's defined by lambda, essentially. So it is a way, this whole model is a way in which you can transfer energy from gravitational to the scalar field and break the conformal symmetry of the scalar sector. So if I think about initial condition now, so what I say this word, I start at the conformal point of the inflaton. Well, what does it mean in this context? Well, I think I don't know. But we can imagine that conformal symmetry, conformal field theories are defined in flat space according to the conformal group of flat space. But there exists a conformal group of the Sitter spacetime. There exists a conformal group of anti-Sitter spacetime. You can define them. They are actually the same. And you can start by starting from a conformal point of the inflaton field. I mean, you can start in this sector. So the conformal with respect to the Sitter conformal group, or well, you can also think in the anti-Sitter conformal groups. Okay, so more or less. Concludes the talk. I just saw that I also still have half an hour to go, but for me, yeah. Just let me conclude. So I think this construction is best to be seen as a EFT sort of construction, in which you want to have construct inflation out of a symmetry breaking of scale symmetry of Weyl symmetry. And this tells you, it is a framework where you can realize this and study its properties rigorously. So that other previous attempts that have been made with, in this case, that they typically didn't consider the operator R squared. Now I've seen some more studies recently where they do consider the operator R squared, and they also end up with this ADS or this negatively curved field space again. That's somehow an universal picture. If you don't include the R squared, that means that you don't have any geometrical or geometrical dilaton field. You just have the scalar field that you start with. But if you include this guy, then you have, and this guy is generated by quantum correction of scalar field anyway, so you must include it in the theory if you want. Let me conclude with this. If there is a question, I'd be happy to answer. Thank you. Yes?
Something about your original wire theory is based on the fact that you're going to reach a measure. It was the wire vector.
That's right, yes.
This co-interrelative is the connection of the wild connection. And that's what the trouble stuff is. This connection, just the norm of a vector, depends on its history. This leads to what's called the second clock. You can't have that.
In wild realization.
Yeah. So, where?
No, I don't. So that's exactly why we. I mean, I know this. I know the story, of course. So Weil introduces the. Introduces this Weil vector that compensates, and of course, you immediately realize that. Yes, but for us, if you have torsion, then metric is. Sir.
Yeah, he had zero torsion.
Yes, but if you introduce torsion, and that's exactly the reason why there is where did I? So the connection. I can give you the whole story if you want.
Yeah.
But so what you want to do is okay. Let's say that there is this connection that has torsion, then I can use this condition to solve for the torsion in terms of.
I have a non-Riemannian geometry.
I have a non-Riemannian geometry, but it's metric compatible. So the length of vector doesn't depend on the history, but it, yeah.
Well, we can talk about that. But how does this connect to? There's a lot of papers on this subject. As for example, Lee Smolin, back 37 years ago, and Skyline Turo.
Right.
And, myself, set an area with a sensor 2 years ago. So how does this connect to all these different cultures?
So I the connection to this is pretty clear. If you have a torsion with this compensating scalar is related to Weil geometry by what's called projective transformation. Take a connection and change it as such, and then you will switch between these two realizations. So that's one.
Turns out the approach is you have a non-Riemannian geometry, you have the vector and the scalar. But the connection is chosen to be the Levi-Shapiro connection, the one from Del Mutualism. And that gets around the problem of Einstein. There's no problem with it.
I guess. And for the other models, I think typically if you want to construct a Weil invariant theory, you have to introduce Dilaton field at least. So you can do that by as such, for example. And so this will be a conformal model, entirely Weil invariant.
This is Steinhardt-Turo.
For example, yes.
Sorry.
Yes. And so. This is one choice, and for this choice, the dilaton you can do Hamiltonian analysis, and then you realize that this model has what, three or two? I think it has three degrees of freedom. So the conformal mode is not
the Steinhardt-Turo can lead to problems.
Yes.
If they have a problem with anyway.
Okay.
All right. So we're a little over time.
Yeah, thank you.